Okay.
Are you really going to ask about the attorney?
I haven't.
Yeah,
not.
You told him we were going to introduce
him. Okay.
Yeah, he's in your ward. So when I opened this up, all this opened up.
So I can't get John to call me back. Well,
that looks different. Has it been updated? I'm going to close that.
So far, so good.
Close that.
You never know.
Yeah.
Is it doing what it's supposed to be doing?
Okay. Yeah.
Hopefully we can get
and find something else that I don't know how to use, right? Oh, okay.
No, we were gone. We were out of town, so I missed that. Yeah, I got, 17 folks.
Besides him, only one other negative.
What?
Oh, it's helpful.
Oh, I don't
know. We're going to put it in there so you can have your food.
Well, it's in there, yeah. I give him shit about doing that. Well, we never know.
Okay, good, thank you.
Yep, good to go.
I think we can coordinate.
Yeah, I went and saw Carol, and she was like, oh, no, I'm too fast. I'm like, oh, well, just tell me. On the museum.
6th Street?
6th and Telcon.
Yeah. It's been there a long time. Well,
she called me.
On Puget Street, they put one of those big orange signs on top of the speed limit 25 things, and those are the things that catch your eye. Maybe they need to start doing those on stop signs. Because somebody on 4th and Telcon came up, I was coming up the street, somebody came up, stopped, looked, and I'm within 30 feet of the intersection, and they pulled out thinking it was a four-way stop.
I've had that happen too there. Especially people going to the high school.
Yeah, they were going to stop, but it was
What's the Wi-Fi on here?
Still, just stop.
It's got a password.
Oh, Caesar Republic.
I've been nailed there. Almost nailed there.
Never know. People don't pay attention.
I have 4, 3, 2, 1.
No,
I call this city council meeting to order. Please rise and join me for the flag salute.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, thank you all for coming. Council and staff, I remind you to speak into your mics so that everybody can hear tonight. We have staff is present with the exception. I don't see anybody from fire. Are they coming?
No, they're not. The assistant chief's out on his wedding anniversary, 26 years.
Oh, well, that's so, a nice excuse to have.
Well, I told him if he was going to take his wife, Judy, to dinner, we could make an exception for him tonight. But if he was just going to go do something else, then no can do. Come to the meeting.
Nice.
So I think Judy's getting dinner tonight.
Well, good. And
we'll
she
ask her tomorrow.
So this brings us to the consent calendar. It's a rather long list tonight. In fact, it goes to the second page, so it's A through L.
Mr. Mayor, I'd like to make a motion. We accept consent calendar for the meeting of August 8th, items A through L.
Second.
Okay, motion was made by Councilmember Lemley, seconded by Councilmember Johnson, to accept the consent calendar items A through L. Is there any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed say nay. And it carries unanimously. Thank you, Council. That brings us to public comment period. So if you would like to make a public comment this evening, you have 3 minutes at the podium. State your name and address for the record. Remember, you're addressing the council and not each other, and it's not a question and answer period. So you've got 3 minutes to tell us what you think. Any takers? Carl.
Carl DeYoung. Address 1030 Warner Street, Cedar Woolley.
Good evening, Mayor and council members and city staff. I am up here to give a commendation to the Cedar Woolley Police Department for an incident that happened last week on our block with a dog-person interaction where the compliance officer showed up and needed the support of the Cedar Woolley Police. And I just wanted to say that they handled that with professionalism and did not escalate the situation. And no firearms were discharged, and some OC was sprayed. In fact, the officer had some blowback himself. So I just wanted to say thank you for the good training that they had and didn't have to escalate the situation. Thank you.
Thank you, Carl. We appreciate that. Next.
Hey, my name is Scott Scamhorn. My address is 4017 Willowbrook Lane, Bellingham, Washington. I came here with a bunch of friends to talk about allowing bikes at the skate park. I don't see why bikes shouldn't be allowed. The park isn't that busy anymore. Bikes don't really do any more damage than skateboards. These days, bikes are 20 pounds. They're all aluminum, rubber, plastic bar ends, plastic pedals, plastic pegs. We all just want to do the same thing as skaters do and enjoy something after work and have fun. This park has lights, which most parks around here don't. And most of us work till 5 or 6 o'clock, and we have nowhere to really go. Then we try to go to Cedro, and then we get kicked out, and our bikes threaten to be taken away. And just hoping to have bikes allowed.
Okay, thank you, Scott. Anyone else?
Hi, everybody. My name is Andrew Brown. I live at 3227 300 Street in Stanwood. Just want to say good evening to everybody. And I'm here to address the bicycles in the park issue as well. I got a young family at home, and when I was younger, BMX was a huge part of my life. And a lot of times rode at the river jumps here in town. Not very supervised, not very well. A lot of stuff could happen down there. I love it that you guys built a really big skate park, a beautiful skate park, well-designed. I'd like my children to have an opportunity to go to a park like that. And for me, riding at the river jumps, and I didn't have that opportunity. A lot of it was hard work that we had to do ourselves. I'd like for my kids to be able to come to a park and just enjoy it, just like the skateboarders do. Like Scotty said, bikes are very safe nowadays. Just really want that opportunity for my children as well. Although they're very young right now, I'd like to give them that as they get older. And right now, you can see all these guys back here, mostly in their 20s. You could refer to them as mature. They're good guys. When you have a collective group of guys that have been doing this for a long time, they can teach the younger people how to properly approach skate park etiquette. Let's put it that way. There's certain do's and don'ts in any situation, in any place. I feel like having a good group of guys like this could teach the younger guys. Typically, the people who are going to get the most enjoyment out of a skate park are probably going to be from 10 to 18 years old, I would say. Guys getting out of school, want to have a good place to go, enjoy themselves. This group of guys that are older can teach those young people the proper way to treat a skate park, to treat each other, to approach a situation safely. And I feel like right now we have a good core of those people. If you guys would consider allowing bicycles at your park, I think that this group of people here would be a good asset to you. And
got about
just like you
seconds.
To take that into consideration. Thank you.
Thank you, Andrew. Ed, you are next.
My name's Ed Kugel. I live at 501 Fidalgo Street. I wanted to congratulate all the city council candidates. I was encouraged to see the number of candidates and also the large audience that came to see the forum. I was impressed by the questions and the depth of knowledge of all the city affairs of the candidates. And everything was going great until the end, when somebody asked the question, if there was a choice between your conscience and the popular vote, how would you vote? And nearly every candidate chose the popular vote. And I get it. It was a political answer. No one wants to say they're going to ignore the voters. that we're a representative government, not a direct democracy. Our founders feared a direct democracy. They saw what happened in France after the revolution. The masses wanted revenge on the elites. Our founders were the elites of the society, and they wanted to ensure that the rights and the privileges that they created would not be reversed by future politicians and threaten their wealth and lives. They created an extremely conservative government in which three branches of equal power would ensure that no individual would become so powerful as to threaten our rights. The executive, legislative, and judicial branches balance each other, so if an individual does become too powerful to dominate our politics, the other two branches can rein in the offender. It was all designed to protect our Constitution and the Bill of Rights. It requires two-thirds of both houses of the legislature and ratification by two-thirds of the states to amend our Constitution. It's an extremely difficult feat that has only been accomplished 14 times in the last 200 years. This is your prime duty, to try and honor our founding fathers by passing laws that reflect our values. The Constitution and the Bill of Rights are our starting point. The only way you're going to be able to do that is by voting your conscience. I saw in a recent poll that atheists were the most untrusted group of people, even among atheists. This is, I believe, is because there's a question of their conscience. Do they believe the golden rule, as all major religions do, treat others like you want to be treated? Or do they believe the law of the jungle, might makes right? It is only with a conscience and some empathy that the laws will be passed.
About 30 seconds, Ed.
That don't benefit the majority, but laws that don't only benefit the majority, but also respect the rights of the minority. So you may find yourself in a situation that President Kennedy called a portrait of courage, in which you must choose to vote your conscience or vote with the majority, knowing that your conscience will cost you future elections. I advise you to vote your conscience, and history will record your decision.
Thank you, Ed.
Hey, Ed, save the date. October 18th is the next candidate forum.
Mr. Anderson.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor. My name is Helge Anderson, 928 Beachley Road. And I'd like to thank Mayor Wagner and his tenant for those two kind letters in the newspaper this summer. We had never known so many good truths about ourselves before. That was an eye-opener. That made me actually start to consider bringing some money over from Sweden, maybe, and buy the newspaper so you can't spread any more of your crap and close the newspaper. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I'd appreciate a little cleaner language. And next, please.
Good evening. My name is Jake Clary. I'm one of the founders of Local 20 Tap Room here in Cedar Woolley. We're located at 102 Woodworth Street. And I was hoping that the council would be willing to consider changing the current food truck law of the $1,000 a year permit. One of the things that we're doing to help support this community is offering the local menu, so we're not trying to discourage any of the other brick-and-mortar businesses or take business away from them. So we are going to continue to offer their menus and help promote their businesses. One of the things that we're doing as well is we have a TV screen in our tap room, and on the nights that it's only there, part of that local theme is just to play Seahawks, Sounders, and Mariners. On any other night, it's going to have its own advertisements going for all the local businesses, excuse me, so the other local restaurants, so that when other tourists or other people come to town, they see, you know, that there's other things going on and other options, other places to go. One of the things with the food trucks is that the trucks that we're looking at offering here are of no competition, really, to the other restaurants. So we want to bring in a sushi truck, Drayton Harbor Oyster Company. They're out of Blaine. They want to come out and shuck oysters, have their mobile barbecue going. So it kind of offers something different and something that's not being currently offered here. And for those two examples of food trucks, they have a great following, not only on social media, but just the people wherever they park. People come from all over just to have their food. So it's going to bring a lot of new and excitement to the town, you know, other people wanting to come and check it out, coming from, you know, Bellingham or all the way from Blaine to have these trucks. And then for every person, you know, so they bring a party of four, there's going to be one person in that party that doesn't want to have sushi that night. So we'll have those menus to go to Liberty Bistro or to go to, you know, Little Thailand or any of the other number of restaurants here in town that they'll, you know, have that opportunity to bring that food. So also you can bring whatever you want. You know, you can bring your own food from home. You can bring your own snacks. There's no, you know, limit to that. So we're just hoping that, you know, with a reconsideration of the permit price and the fact that we would be containing the food truck on private property and giving them adequate facilities.
About 30 seconds.
So we'll have ADA bathrooms available for them and all the city utilities. So you'll be able to, they'll be able to plug their trucks in, have water, and everything's coming, you know, from the city. We're a brick-and-mortar business that we've invested in, purchased the building, and are paying our property taxes as well as the impact fees here in Cedar Woolley. So thank you for your consideration.
Thank you, Jay. Yeah, we welcome you to town, and I think that the council is probably interested in considering your request, so we'll have some staff work to do. Dennis.
As Dennis is on his way up, can we ask him when your projected opening date is?
We're shooting for the first part of September.
I'm Dennis O'Neill, and I reside at 109 Tellicott Street. And I, too, I hate to pick on the mayor up there, but I was sort of shocked that he put me in the same category as Mary Anderson in favor of not, you know, Mary's changed her mind, too, a little bit. Maybe not changed her mind, but I think she saw early on that consolidation of the libraries made a lot of sense. I did, and I don't really know why I was quoted as being against the library consolidation, because that's not the truth, and I don't know where that came from. Maybe on the very early aspects of that 6 months ago, but I was in banking, and I know consolidation, and I know how it works, and I know we get a better facility at less cost in the short run and the long run. And so I do find exception to, I'm sorry, Keith, on your comments about me being pro-library and lumped in the same category with Wendy. And I thought that was pretty, I thought it was pretty low to, you know, I can handle that. I can handle criticism just like Keith does, and we get over it. But I just couldn't believe that Wendy was roped into that, too. And if anybody knows her, she's the most, probably the most easygoing, mid-40s? I mean, I thought it was pretty hard on her to do that, and so I agree with Hegna about Mary's husband. I can't pronounce his name. I wish he'd change it to Bob. Anyway, anyway, I just wanted to mention that, because if I didn't mention it, it would probably indicate my silence agreement with what Keith had said about it, and I don't think it was appropriate, and I think that everybody remembers when I got up here and apologized. I think it was 2 weeks ago or 4 weeks ago for, you know, saying something about deaf, dumb, and stupid to council members. And I still think that was quoted totally out of context when I talked to the paper, but I'm not going to go there anymore. But I think it takes a big person to come up and say personal attacks really aren't warranted at any time by anybody. And I think it got out of hand, and it makes it really hard to bring unity back and to make a common interest when you're, you know, I'm sorry, but when you make personal attacks, and that's what it was, I just think it makes it really tough, you know, to get a working relationship with people that might be up there. It makes it really tough. If, you know, just my only comments, and I thank you for your time.
Thank you, Dennis. Anybody else for a public comment period? Phil.
My name's Philip Murray. I live at 223 State Street. I have a business building there, and I'm proposing that you limit parking on State Street from Metcalf to Murdoch Street to 2 hours, because I have people that work around there that seem to want to park in front of the businesses all day long and sometimes all night long. There's people in apartments there that park all day and all night, and it really can affect the businesses around there. And if they want three-hour parking, because somebody mentioned three-hour parking, if they want three-hour parking, go across the street, because you have it over there. Thank you.
Thank you, pal. Anyone else for a public comment period? Yes, sir, in front.
I'm James Vandekamp, 4017 Willowbrook Lane.
James, could you say your last name again, please?
Vandekamp.
Thank you.
I'm also trying to get bikes into the skate park in Cedro. I just want to talk a little bit about the economic side of our sport. It's not really known too well, but parks like the one here are actually, like, people will travel quite a ways to ride them, which can bring money into the town as well. We came down from Bellingham to this meeting. We'll be here eating after we come down to ride, buying gas in town, that kind of stuff. Just wanted to touch on that aspect of us being able to ride the park as well.
No, no comments from the seats, please.
That's all. Thank you.
Thank you. If you would like to comment, you can come up.
Sam Butler, 1245 Arezzo Drive. I've lived in Skagit Valley 25 years now. This is the first park that's actually been worth something. I can't even bring my boy likes to ride a bike, not a skateboard. I actually skate. I don't see any issue with letting these guys there, not at all. Provided, you know, the right equipment, plastic bags, bar ends, stuff like that. I'd love to see my boy ride his bike there. Like he was saying, revenue, contests, you have contests there. That brings in people from all over. And, yeah, I just think that bike should be allowed.
Okay, thank you, Sam. Anyone else? I saw a hand in the back, way back. You're up. Do I have a comment from council?
We'll let him speak.
Okay.
Evening. My name is James Wood, 3601 Francis Road, Mount Vernon. And I actually helped design the skate park under the recruitment of John Hunter while I was an employee at Janicki Industries. And post being laid off from Janicki, they had a slowdown. I put in 50 to 60 hours of design time into the skate park under the hope that I'd be able to ride my bike there. And sadly, it's turned out otherwise. My one visit, my bike was almost confiscated. I guess it'd be nice to have access to the same park and the same facilities. So, thank you.
Thank you, James. Go ahead, Rick.
Would it be appropriate to ask questions, these gentlemen?
You may, but if you don't mind, I'm glad to see you all here in a group for once instead of answering individual emails about how come I can't ride my bike in the park. So the reason is because the city didn't build the park. The Rotary and donors built the park, and that was a condition of the building of the park. We cannot renege on that, or we have cheated our donors out of a condition they put upon us. However, we're happy to work with a group, just like we have with football, just like we have with youth soccer, just like we did with the skate park. We have property. If you guys are serious about it and want to earn the money and help design it like James helped design it, come talk to us. We've got places. It won't be there. And I'll still have the police take your bike. But that's for skateboarders. It was built for skateboarders with the condition that it was going to be for skateboards only. You don't get to ask me questions. Rick.
Kind of my question to these guys is if whether obviously some of you are boarders, whether you've had conflicts with the boarders here and that for the most part. If things change, you guys predominantly would ride evenings, more so because you're all working gentlemen and that. So you're here from 7 to 9 kind of things where kids after school are here during the day. So there's not really going to be a lot of student conflict with you gentlemen being and ladies as older than who they are and things with that. So, yes?
We could even do like bike night. Springer Skate Park in Springer, Washington. YMCA. They have a park. They just allowed bikes this year full-time for the first time in 10 years. And they did a trial period over a year of allowing bikes one day a week. And they had no pegs, plastic pedals, plastic bar ends, just to kind of see how it went. And he was really happy with how that whole transition went, and then went ahead and did bikes full-time.
So how about you guys set up an appointment to come talk to Parks and Rec and me, and we'll talk about a possible way ahead. Did you speak already?
No, I'm not.
You may approach the podium.
What about talking to the Rotary Board and seeing?
Yeah, that's something we can do. Yes, sir.
My name is William Bird. My address is 635 Sandpaper Place in Burlington, Washington. I do want to add on the bicycles at the skate park, because the sign does say no non-skateboarders allowed. I see scooter kids and rollerblades there all the time. The police give them no hassle at all. That's basically the only other thing I have to add. And, I mean, we wear helmets. We've been at the skate park a long time. We stay out of everyone's way. If someone's coming at us, we move. You know, there's never any collisions. The little six-year-olds on the scooters, running around throwing their scooters in the bowl, being down there. If a skateboarder comes around, drops in, they don't know they're there. That's pretty dangerous. So I just wanted to add the no non-skateboarder sign. Scooters and rollerblades, I see them there all the time, and they never get any grief for it. So that's all I have.
Thank you, William. Anybody else for a public comment period? Okay, I'll close the public comment period at this time. We'll move on to item 5, unfinished business. This is the City Council Critical Goals and Objectives. It's a second reading, and it's on pages 81 and 83 of your packets, Council. And Aaron, are you introducing this?
Yeah, there's really nothing to introduce. You can see the track changes version in the packet with the modifications that were a result of your discussion at the last meeting.
Any questions from council? Comments?
First read.
No, I believe this is a second reading, so we'll be looking for action tonight, if that's the council's pleasure.
Okay, the terminology change.
Go ahead, Jermaine.
Under infrastructure investments, where it says the bullet point that says adequately maintain city streets. The bullet point that says adequately maintain city streets under infrastructure investments. I was just wondering if there was a better way to, you know, it just seems really broad. Is there a better, I don't know if there's a better word to use to.
I'm not quite sure how best to describe that. I mean, we know that we're falling behind on our regular road maintenance, so we're really doing our best to keep up with the resources that are available. Adequately maintain sounded better than attempt to maintain.
I suppose. Okay, you got a good point.
And I think originally it said maintain, and I thought that was not wonderful, because we know that we don't have the capability to fully maintain our road and sidewalk infrastructure as it's currently built.
True.
Okay. Thank you.
So the recommended motion is at the bottom of the page on 81.
Make a motion to adopt the updated critical goals and objectives. Second.
The motion was made by Councilmember Cornegay, seconded by Councilmember Johnson, to adopt the updated critical goals and objectives. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say nay. And it carries. New business. We have three items under new business. The third item, the Cedar Woolley Museum lease, is an information item. It's something that we have put out to the museum, and they've asked for some time to review the concept and see how it would affect them. So we're just going to go to items 6 and 7. Item 6, proposed amendments to the definition of building heights in Chapter 1704, Cedar Woolley Municipal Code. It's a first reading on pages 84 through 92, and I believe this is John.
Yes,
All right, good evening. We're planning department's always looking for ways to improve the code. And one thing that we were seeing recently is that a lot of buildings were being proposed three stories, and they were coming in just over the, like, in the residential zone, it'd be 35 feet. So they'd be just over 35 feet, and in order for them to look right, they kind of had to be 35 feet. You know, otherwise the developer would just, like, lower the pitch of the roof a little bit, and then the building would look a little weird. So to help developers come up with three-story buildings that looked good, we thought about ways of helping that. And instead of raising the height of the building limits in town, what we realized, and we kind of knew this for a while, is our planning code says maximum height is to the peak of a roof. So we looked at the definition, and then in the building code, the International Building Code and the International Residential Code, it actually describes the height of a building is the average point between the peak of the roof and the lowest eave of the highest roof piece. So basically, if your roof goes 10 feet high, it would actually be measured at 5 feet down, that midpoint of the roof. So what we looked at, had the Planning Commission look at, is changing the planning code to also to have the same definition of building height as the building code. Therefore, we could allow buildings that are just a couple of feet higher without really changing all of our zoning code, or just make a small adjustment to our building code. And so that's what we've done. The Planning Commission made a recommendation to change the building code to change the planning definition of building height to be the midpoint between the peak and the eave. And that is the entirety of this change.
Okay. Any questions? Is this a typical definition that's used elsewhere in the industry, or an international definition, or?
Well, yeah, we borrowed the language from the International Building Code.
Okay. Thank you.
Have we turned down building proposals because of that?
No.
Are you just seeing a potential conflict in the future?
No. Typically they ask the planning department then to have to approve an administrative zoning waiver for an additional 2 feet in height, which is a lot of extra work and expense because it costs money to apply for that. And time for the developer to wait for us to say, yes, you can have 2 additional feet. It's not really. And so we're trying to alleviate that, unless, of course, the council feels that we should be strictly limiting to a certain height, and then this change would not happen.
Okay. Any other questions? It's a first read, so if you have any, you can bring them back to John. Item 7, resolution closing a portion of Talcott Street at Central Elementary School. This is a first reading, page 93 to 95 in your packets. And who's introducing this? Aaron?
Sure. So this is an item that's been discussed at City Council a number of times, and it's also been discussed between the city and the school district probably half a dozen times. The concept is to take the area of Talcott Street that is currently closed during the school day and during the school year and leave it closed permanently. And ultimately, the idea would be to allow the school, which owns the property on both sides of Talcott, the capacity to more securely access all of their property, you know, as part of their security upgrades during the school day, but then during the non-school time to have that area that's currently open to community use still open to community use. So this resolution is drafted with a one-year trial period because we don't have that plan fully developed, and we're also not sure, you know, what unintended consequences may be out there. So what this resolution says is we would close it at the beginning of the school year and not reopen it until a year from now in August, the end of August, and maybe not ever, depending on how the project proceeds. The only exceptions would be, of course, emergency vehicles, you know, utility service vehicles, because we've got some utilities in there, school buses, and funeral processions. So that's the way it's drafted, and it's, like I say, it's a one-year trial period. I think part of what the school's looking at is continuing to work with the parent group for the investment as well as possible bond dollars that could be used to complete the security work that they'd like to complete. In terms of city cost, I think it's pretty minimal. Our crews will need to go out and probably install some signage at Talcott at the two ends of the block to indicate that it's no longer a through street. And I would expect that Mark will probably put something more on the closure arms besides a stop sign, something that meets our traffic manual for a barricaded point on a street. So pretty minimal cost from a city standpoint.
Okay. Any questions, comments?
I just have one comment. So living on Talcott Street, one thing that I have noticed during the summer is that there are a lot of people who still utilize the schoolyard, and we still have a lot of people who are just flying through those stop signs and actually fly up that road. And it can be a hazard. It can be a potential hazard, danger to those who are there with their children or the children who are there playing. So I like the idea of this.
There are a lot of kids that come on their own.
Yeah.
You know, those that are 7, 8, 9, 10 years old.
They do.
On that equipment on the north side of the street.
They do. That's right.
That equipment's also in the process of being upgraded by the parent group, so it may very well attract more community use post-upgrade.
Yeah, kids use that as a playground year-round, so it's their park for the neighborhood. I had a chance to doorbell today, and from the 400 block through to Township, talked to a lot of people, only one negative, and she just thinks the school impacts her too much already, but the neighbor across the street thinks it's wonderful. So I did want to say, though, that I talked to one resident who went to a school with a guy named Johnny Ingstrom, and he was hit, dragged by the car, survived the ordeal with the automobile, but that is when the district in the 1960s started using that gate during school hours. And I just think, you know, with the amount of traffic that it sees, with that playground having access, I just think this is the right thing for the neighborhood and for the kids who use that. We don't need another Johnny Ingstrom.
Okay. Anybody else? This is a first read, so no action tonight.
Well, I was going to say also, that road hasn't been repaired at all. It's pretty rough, isn't it? And people are still flying down that street so much.
Well, it's newer than most railroad bridges. And Burlington Northern tells us their bridges are in excellent condition, so therefore our road must also be in excellent condition.
It's literally 100 years old. 101.
I was out there earlier this week and had forgotten really just how bad it is from about, what, the 700 block to the 1,000 block. It's a remarkably crummy street in that section. I mean, just really bad. I don't think there's no slab jacking that would solve it. There's nothing like that. So, you know, it's probably worth asking the question. There has become this, I don't know if it's true or if it's urban lore, that the neighbors like it that way. And
I do.
It's probably worth asking the neighbors in that part of Talcott, what do you want to do? Is this something you want us to look at? And there are certainly treatments. You know, Mark could design a project that would probably break up some of the concrete, put down some fabric, geotextile fabric, and then asphalt cover it. That would give it another, you know, 20 years before it needed more work.
Are you talking from 7th Street to Township, or
really? It's really that. So the other section, and of course, I used to live in the 400 block. It's not that bad. I mean, my impression, but you get to the 700 block, and it's
that two block stretch.
It's a whole different story. You're. I don't even know how you. I mean, you couldn't. I thought the mayor's coffee was going to end up all over the car.
I know where all the potholes are on that street.
That's right.
Well, I see you.
I'm all over the road when I'm going home. I know exactly where they're
We could run the Evoque course down there.
I do.
I think it's more fun to drive on that. You know, I think that's like a sport. But actually, that is a question I had. I was going to wait till council chat, whatever it's called. But three people
asked me. Why don't you wait till council chat then, and we'll do it then.
All right.
Thank you for your work. If there's anything else that addresses this resolution.
Mr. Mayor, is there
any,
it sounds like a lot of us are in consensus. Is there any opposition to making the proposition tonight rather than wait till second read, or do you want to leave it for public input or something with that too?
Well, I always prefer to have two reads if we can, unless things are time pressing, but it's a council's decision.
I do know that Mr. Berg and Mr. Mayor put in those two little words kind of on my benefit, but you can remove those from the appropriate ordinance. I don't think it's going to happen in the next 20 years. We'll make some consideration to the school district when the time arises.
Okay. Just one thing. Whereas the city council finds that it is in the best interests of the school, I would use the word children rather than kids.
You're saying school children?
Yes.
Point taken.
We could go old school and go pupils.
There we go.
And then you could get rid of school. But
all right, I'll do it.
Okay, moving on to committee reports.
Did we do not a first reading on the museum lease?
No, the museum would like time to look at it, and it's just there as an informational item tonight. So,
but we haven't talked to the council about the terms because it's a two-way street. I just don't want to end up where they come back and they're happy and the council says no can do. So.
Okay, well, why don't I have you introduce it then, and then council, if you have any questions.
Sure. So the museum's current lease expires at the end of next month, and the reason it's on the agenda without having kind of completed the negotiation with the museum is twofold. One, it includes an element that the council hasn't discussed, which is the proposed option. And two, I'd understood the museum was eager to have something in time for their anniversary, which is coming up here in about a week. So we tried to get it out so it could potentially be up to speed in time for that. Their current lease, the expiring lease is a 25-year lease that had a buck-a-year lease term. The city was responsible for the exterior envelope and I think some other things, but not including the facade. And then the museum was responsible for the rest of it. Over time, the museum's use of the space expanded. They also took on the utilities. The drafted lease that's in your packet is quite a bit different. It's a 5-year lease with 1 5-year lease extension. During the first 5-year term, it includes a purchase option that would allow the museum to buy the building for $150,000, which is, of course, significantly less than the building's fair market value. However, their purchase option, if exercised, comes with some strings. Specifically, it would require that the building be operated as a museum, open to the public for a minimum of 1 day a week, defined as 6 hours. That it any on-site parking would be allowed, you know, public use would be allowed, and that the apartment space that the city renovated last year would be leased back to the city for 25 years at a $1 per year cost. So. Kind of mirroring the lease, the original lease terms with the museum.
Reversionary clause?
And all of that would be supported or enforced by a reversionary clause in the deed. So that allows the city to pull it back if the museum ceases to exist or attempts to sell it or change it. So that's the method by which the price can be reduced, is that the city is receiving a benefit from the museum's operation. The other significant modification to this lease, besides just having a lot more detail, is that it does shift the responsibility for building maintenance onto the tenant. So instead of paying the buck a year, the museum pays nothing but agrees to maintain the building, essentially to customary standards. So that would pull the city out of being the first phone call for the leaky roof or whatever it may be. That's been a fairly costly building over the years. This year, the costs are about $17,000. And that's something that would be, I think, very nice from a city perspective for a tenant that doesn't pay any rent to kind of take on that responsibility. And I think that may be one of the terms that the museum is currently mulling over. So that's how it was drafted. I guess the specific question for the council is do you have any direction? You know, we're going to hear back from the museum after they talk to their board. This is kind of our first touch and hearing from you other than the prior meeting where you expressed an interest in having at least a 10-year term. So that 10-year was accomplished with a 5 and a second 5 that is within the control of the museum. So they have the ability to lock up 10 under that scenario.
Okay. Thank you, Aaron.
Aaron, can you confirm for me that this is not being considered a first read being forced into second read next meeting?
Well, it's a first reading tonight. So if the city council was happy with it, if the museum was happy with it, had a chance to review it, came here tonight, said we think it's great, then, you know, we'd be asking you to take action so they could have it for their anniversary. But they have not had a chance to talk to their full board and their legal counsel and all of that. So they're working through their process right now.
So it won't necessarily have to be a second read at the next meeting.
Right. At this point, it's a proposal.
Okay.
No. Yeah, no, it could be totally different. Is that your question? Is in terms of the form and format? Or?
I don't want the museum to have to be rushed through it due to our council agenda.
No. If they come back to us and say, hey, we haven't had a chance, you know, we're good till the end of September under the current lease. So there's plenty of time. You know, we could consider this at the September meeting rather than the second August meeting if need be.
Thank you.
Committee reports. Chief Tucker.
Those that showed up for National Night Out this last weekend, we had a pretty successful turnout there at Bingham Park. Had a lot of folks come by, a lot of kids come by looking at cars and trucks and different booths. The sheriff's office brought their great big armored MRAP vehicle, which is really popular. That thing's a monster. And the fire trucks had the great big ladder set up. So I think it went well, and hopefully we'll build on that for years to come, and had a lot of fun. A little hot standing around for 4 or 5 hours talking to little kids in armor all day, but they sure got a kick out of it, and so did we. We had a good time. Katie was out there in her patrol car and just had a blast. She met tons of little girls who thought that was the greatest thing to see a female officer out there that really enjoyed and knew her stuff. We're plagued with vacations right now and military duty, so we're shorthanded. But hopefully, I'm going to be joining that group here by the end of the month. But we're just really running a minimal staff for August, which is pretty normal for us. And on a bright note, we're going to be interviewing candidates for open position on Monday, and we'll have oral boards set up on Monday. We have one. We've tried this before. We're doing a Skype interview for one of the subjects who's on the East Coast, who's looking to relocate. His wife's in the military and transferred to Whidbey, and he's looking for a job. And would love to work for us. So that's kind of interesting. But we're going to be doing interviews all day long. If you stop by the office and want to take a peek in, we'll be upstairs in the Skagit room. Let me know if you'd like to come by, and we can talk about it and kind of explain what the process is. Be happy to let you know. And that's all I have.
Thank you, Chief.
Can I ask a question?
Go ahead.
The annual night out, I talked to Sally, I guess, who was kind of she claims it was her idea and everything, but that's not what she was envisioning from what she was saying, and I do remember it's kind of like a neighborhood thing more than a one location thing, mm-hmm. and they kind of move around. It's the whole point is for neighbors to meet their neighbors, and I didn't know if that was something that could be worked into it maybe for next year or... Like, just a little bit different. like more traditional.
And that's what my idea was, you know, little neighborhoods, barbecues, and that kind of thing. But, you know, we're kind of testing the waters, see how this works. And we were really participants. We got asked to show up, and we did. And it would be kind of hard to do that from us directed. That would have to be directed by somebody else, I think. And we really don't have a mechanism for doing that. Mm-hmm. I love that idea. I think that's a great idea. But doable, I don't know. There was like two other things going on that night too. Mm-hmm. We had a concert at the park at the end of that and all that. And but it's an idea, and if somebody ran with it, we participate in that as well.
I think it's usually on a weeknight too. Yeah. So that would yeah. help with the other events going on. That wouldn't be an issue, I don't think.
Mm-hmm. Well, and we're in Washington. Western Washington, so we have a narrow window of nice weather to almost guarantee. So you have to kind of just hope for the best. But I love the idea of the neighborhoods, like neighborhood watches and stuff like that. We don't have the participation for that kind of stuff to make a lot of that happen from us. They have to be from...
Yeah, we play actually just a small supporting role. So if right. somebody wanted to do that, and I did have this discussion with Sally Carlson several years ago, and like many, many great ideas, it's a great idea, and who's going to do it? Right. So Andrew from Boys and Girls Club decided he was going to do it. So when people step up and try to do things, I let them do it their way, try not to get in it. Mm-hmm. Anything else,
Chief? Thank you.
John?
So the Planning Commission is going to be talking about a couple of things. Public Works Department's got some minor updates to the 20-year Transportation Improvement Plan, which is, well, not the Transportation Improvement Plan. I'm sorry, that's the wrong word. It's the Comprehensive Plan, so the 20-year Comprehensive Plan for Transportation. So the Planning Commission is going to be holding a public hearing on that, as well as starting off looking at some of the rezone requests, and including the council had requested that the Planning Commission hold a public hearing, set of public hearings, to review possible options for the zoning of the area south of Jameson Street near the ball field, the football field. So generally in the area of 109 Jameson, the former Cedroli Mill property. So the Planning Commission is going to be holding a public meeting on that. There's not going to be a hearing yet. We're just kind of introducing the topic, which is holding public process to review what potential uses might be good at that site. To that end, I've spoken with the property owner. They're interested in doing something with their property. They're not entirely sure. They don't have any plans for their property, so they're interested in the public process and seeing if anybody has any good ideas for what might be down there. And I, of course, told them, be careful what you ask for. I'm sure there'll be lots of good ideas. That's also the property that you may recall we've been pursuing an ecology grant for to do some environmental studies to see what the extent of environmental contamination is on the property. So that brings me to our late materials that are on your desk. If you recall, we've talked about this in the past. The city's been applying through the Department of Ecology to acquire funds for a two-pronged environmental study. One is a phase one environmental study, which looks at the history of the property from a land use perspective. They go through records and old permits and just basically a document search to find out what contamination might be out there. And that's more or less the extent of a phase one environmental study. After that, then there can be a phase two environmental study, which is actually going out there, poking around in the ground in the areas where it looks like where they had found there might be something from the phase one environmental study. The city council had given staff and I think the mayor, who was a little unclear in the minutes, but had given staff and the mayor the ability to apply for and sign documents on this grant application. But just in case, we thought we'd bring this information to the council tonight. Just yesterday afternoon, received word from the Department of Ecology that there's $15,000 available for the Phase 1 environmental study in this year's budget. So that work would need to be done by the end of October, I believe. So it's a fairly narrow window. So the late materials on your desk today, I'm asking for two separate motions on it. One relates to accepting the grant from the Department of Ecology and authorizing the mayor to sign the grant acceptance form. It's called an interagency agreement between the Department of Ecology and the city to conduct a Phase 1 environmental site assessment at the former Cedar Woolley Lumber Company. And then the second part of it would be to sign authorize the mayor to sign a professional services agreement with Mall Foster and Alonghi Incorporated to actually do the study. They're a consultant that would perform the Phase 1 environmental study, do all the research for us. So, as I said, the attachment one is the interagency agreement, which is the city accepting the grant, and the attachment two is the professional services agreement with the consultant to actually perform the work. This is something that we've discussed in the past. Probably would normally be a consent item, but it was late materials, so I apologize. But we wanted to move it forward as fast as possible and not wait another 2 or 3 weeks before the next city council meeting.
Okay, thank you, John. Any questions for John? Those motions are on the back of the first page.
Mr. Mayor, I'd like to make a motion to authorize Mayor Wagner to sign an interagency agreement between the State of Washington, the Department of Ecology, and the City of Cedar Woolley to conduct Phase 1 environmental site assessment for the former Cedar Woolley Lumber Company property.
Second.
Okay, motion was made by Councilmember Sandstrom, seconded by Councilmember Owen, authorizing me to sign an interagency agreement between the State of Washington, Department of Ecology, and the City of Cedar Woolley to conduct a Phase 1 environmental site assessment at the former Cedar Woolley Lumber Company property. Is there any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say nay. Motion carries.
Mr. Mayor, I'd like to make a motion to authorize Mayor Wagner to sign a professional service agreement between the City of Cedar Woolley and Ma Foster and Alonghi Incorporated to perform a Phase 1 environmental site assessment of the former Cedar Woolley Lumber Company property.
Second.
The motion was made by Councilmember Sandstrom, seconded by Councilmember Cornegay, authorizing the mayor to sign a professional services agreement between the City of Cedar Woolley and Ma Foster Alonghi Incorporated. To perform a Phase 1 environmental site assessment survey at the former Cedar Woolley Lumber Company property. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say nay. Okay. And they carry. Well, that's $15,000 that we didn't have to help us identify what's out there, because I think that is in big part why that property has sat for so long, just rumors. Hopefully we'll get the answers. Thanks, John. Anything else, John?
Nope.
Mark? Oh, yes.
Well, I just have a question. Do you have dates yet set for the public hearing for a forum?
So the Planning Commission meeting is August 15th, 6:30 tonight, right? Or 6:30 right here. And that's going to be a public hearing for the transportation transportation element of the comprehensive plan. We'll see what the Planning Commission wants to do as far as the evaluation of the zoning of the 109 Jameson property. Supposedly, I mean, likely going to be September, I think it's 20th, it's the third Tuesday in September, again at 6:30 in the evening. is the likely time that we're going to have the public hearing on that. I'm checking my calendar right now. It's the 19th. I apologize. September 19th will be the Planning Commission meeting. It's likely that there'll be the public hearing for that at that date, but we'll see how it goes. See what the property owner wants to do. They're interested in the process, like I said, and they're going to be active in it.
Thank you, John. Mark?
Thank you, Mayor. A couple of things. The Cascade Trail project is moving along well. They paved most of the driveways and the up to the curbs today and yesterday, and should finish all of the work in the next couple of weeks. So the project is going to finish maybe 2 or 3 weeks early. Both the crack seal and the emergency pavement repair projects are complete, and we've got the final bills, and they're slightly under our revised estimates for those, so they came out well. You awarded tonight the CIPP sewer liner project, and that work should start in the next couple of weeks. But one of the lines goes under State Street School, so we'll do that first thing, get that done before school starts on September the 5th. I wanted to make you aware, we've had a project that both John and David Lee have been tracking, a development, a 67-lot subdivision north of Jones Road and west of the trestle. That project requires extension of our sewer main that's in Jones Road, about 900 feet from Garden of Eden Road to the east to the entrance to that subdivision. That contractor, we had the pre-construction conference for that today, and they're going to start next week. And so you may hear some of that from your constituents. We are requiring them to maintain traffic for the residents out there and the trucking companies that are located in that area. But it's going to be difficult because it's a 14-foot deep sewer. Those are always challenges, and that's pretty sandy soil out there, so there's going to be some issues. We anticipate we'll keep a close eye on things and make sure that they continue to provide access for emergency vehicles and buses and those kind of things. They will be working after school starts. It's about a 40 working day, about a month and a half project to complete that. They are redesigning the subdivision itself. They had approval to go ahead with that, but they have gotten some feedback from realtors that their design was not real attractive, and so they're redoing that, but they plan to move ahead with the rest of that sometime in the next number of months as well. Beyond that, our city public work operations crew will start their asphalt overlay project on the 18th. Includes the end of Jameson, where Harold lives, and a few other streets, and we're still trying to get a firm county from schedule from Skagit County. It was going to be next Friday, but it's looking like it might be a couple of weeks yet before they do the chip seal work. But all of that should be happening yet in August, and we'll get all these paving projects wrapped up for the year. You probably noticed in the grant approval that you approved tonight with the consent calendar that we are going to be the recipients, assuming they approve the grant, of a $50,000 capacity grant. It's a program that we've received. I think this is the fourth round of that. Legislature provides money to support our efforts to meet the stormwater permit requirements for the city. So we're glad to see that. I didn't really see that coming, but that's a good outcome for us. So that's all I had, Mayor.
Thank you. Any questions, Mark?
Aaron?
Alibi?
No, well, I guess my question is, today building or doorbelling, I've talked to a lot of people on Talcott on the end, that's the crummy best part, I guess, the 700 block. And I think three of the residents I spoke to asked about replacing that or repaving that. And I wanted to know, I assume because it's concrete, it's going to take big machinery to take it out and all. What is a true cost or an estimate of what it would be to replace that segment? Or, I mean, what's needed to actually rip it out and fix it? Or you said something about putting a membrane on it?
Geotextile fabric, but I'll defer to the engineer.
Yeah, I don't have an estimate. I haven't tried to do one on that particular road. It is quite a bit more expensive to deal with those old concrete slabs. There's a couple of ways it can be done. You can crack and seat them and use them as the base for the new pavement. In a residential neighborhood, that's probably problematic because it's going to shake the china and all the rest of that. Just plain removing them is going to be quite expensive. Then we're going to have the surprises of what's underneath of them because they probably did very little preparation when they built them back 100 years ago. But I can look into that for you over the next few weeks. And
yeah, thank you. Because at least a few people that are interested in what it would take or really just please pave it and fix it. But, you know, I don't know what's possible. So
we did, at the mayor's behest, we met with a company that does what's called slab jacking a few weeks ago to see if we could straighten up some of the ones that have tilted over time. We got an estimate back from them, and it wasn't cost effective for what we would have gotten out of it. So there is a possibility that we could do some pre-leveling and put it's called a Tensar Geo Grid fabric on there that is relatively successful with preventing the reflection cracking to come through. I've done that successfully on concrete pavements a number of times over the years that have held up quite well since then, but not in as bad a shape as Talcott is with the tilted slabs and stuff. So I'm not totally sure about that. If we were going to go that route, I'd probably want to try a block or two rather than the whole thing before I went to the extent of doing all of that.
Well, you're looking for the scope would just be 7th to Township, right?
Well, yeah, yes. I mean, that's where people ask.
That's by far the worst area. Yeah.
And they're right in that, right on the 700 block, right? Both sides of the street were not happy. So just curious.
Yeah. Mark, with that, in that all of the 800 block is curbed. The 700 block, the eastern half is curbed, and the western half is just flat grass and things too. Would that entail curbing the entire street down to 7th Street? Because a lot of those people have gravel driveways that they pull off and park into for additional parking. So would that alleviate or eliminate some of their parking opportunities?
Well, I haven't looked at that very – I know what you're talking about, but I haven't looked at that closely enough to be able to answer that question right now. It all comes down to dollars. Those are local access streets, so there are no grant funds available for that whatsoever. We would have to fund that out of our very slim local access program, and it's going to be tough to do that. I can say that up front. As you know, we've been gradually raising our local access road budget. We're spending about $100,000 a year on chip seals and the little bit of overlays we do on those and things. And a project like that could easily be $500,000 for 3 or 4 blocks.
Would LIDs be involved with that to get the residents to do that?
Well, LIDs is the way they were originally built.
Yeah.
And certainly that is a vehicle that can be done. We haven't done one here in quite a long time, but they are a possibility. And there's nice houses in there, so it's possible people would be interested in that. That is a possibility. If I might request your indulgence for just a minute, there was one other thing I wanted to bring to your attention. You approved the final acceptance of the SRV contract for the Jameson project tonight. And I don't know if you had to look at that very closely. You've heard me say this before, but I just thought for your benefit and for the public that talks to you about building these larger projects that I should just reiterate how we came out on that job. It was about a $3.1 million job, including about $500,000 in right-of-way donations for the project. Our total cost, city dollars, on that project was a little under $30,000. The rest of it was grants, that project, that's about as good as it gets. And in fact, of that $30,000, it really isn't even cash because I was the project manager on it, and we did the project inspection. The project actually covered about $173,000 of salaries for the city staff as well over the year and a half that we were working on that. And I think it's worth I'm not trying to lift myself up. This is a good result for the city and the way we do our road projects. And we've had others that have come in very well also, but this is really the best one I've seen since we've been here. And I don't think we're done doing that yet. In fact, Fruitdale is also going to be a very positive one from that aspect because of the participation of the port and the county in funding that and the way we're doing it. We'll have more cash, but it's coming from our impact fee fund. For your constituents, when people ask you, how come you're spending all this money to build these new roads and not fixing Talcott and things like that? It's because we're leveraging these funds. They're gasoline tax funds through the state, predominantly through TIB. But we also designed that project with federal dollars through the Surface Transportation Program. And it's just a good result for us and a model that we want to continue to pursue as we continue to grow and deal with these traffic issues that we have around town. So I just wanted to point that out to you. And if you do get questions, that's something you can certainly point out to your constituents.
Thank you, Mark. And and thanks for all the work that makes that happen. Aaron.
So the reason that really happened is the day I was doing Mark's evaluation a couple years ago, I'd just been to Costco with my refund check, and I bought the groceries, and they handed me the cash. And I said, now, Mark, why can't we build a major project and get cash back? So that's what he did. Brought it home. I just have a couple items. One is Puget Sound Energy has requested an easement to serve the Helping Hands Food Bank on our property out there. I'm working with them on a couple of terms in the document, but without objection from the council, we'll present that for the mayor's signature between now and the next meeting. This easement is necessary for the locating of utilities to the property. So is there any objection to us moving forward with that? Wanted to follow up on Phil's question. I've been out with Phil more than once, and I guess the question for the council is, are you interested in seeing an ordinance that would take the downtown parking restrictions and extend it east State Street to Murdoch?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
I think more specifically, like a downtown business core. I know it's hard for some, maybe like leave the alleys be, but I think our parking lots and at least all the major arterials should have that. So Ferry Street and State Street in the CBD.
I think State Street from Wally to YouTube might even be reasonable.
So which committee would you like to have a further discussion about this with to sort of refine it? Or
good question.
I mean, I write whatever you want, but it sounds like there's interest in maybe
business.
Doing a little more analysis on it. Would this be a business development committee?
Mm-hmm. I would agree with that.
Okay, and then would that also be the committee you'd like to take the request that we heard from Jake tonight to? All right. Well, then we'll get that scheduled as soon as we can to get both those moving towards a resolution for the city council. What's your time frame? Is fairly soon. Sounds like maybe in the next month. Yeah. Okay. Just wanted to call your attention to tomorrow's city council meeting.
Yes.
Don't forget, 10:30 a.m., the Skagit County Commissioner's Hearing Room. That will be our joint meeting with the Skagit County Commissioners and the Port of Skagit Commissioners to receive the award from the Governor's Office and get an update on the Swift Center. And, of course, I don't know, oftentimes they put meetings that are on camera, so, you know, you want to not wear bright polka dots, or maybe you do. So, we'll see you there in the morning. That's all I've got tonight.
Aaron, do we know if the governor is going to be there himself?
No.
He's not? Okay.
No, this will be coming from, I think, Department of Commerce. So Commerce staff will be presenting that award.
Okay, thank you. Patsy?
On Monday, the budget call for 2018 will go out to department heads and give them instructions on how to do this year's budget and when the deadlines are. I received a call from Team Bellingham of the State Auditor's Office, and they will be here for the annual audit on October 9th. It will probably be just about a week. It's a financial statement audit only, so it will be relatively short in duration. And they will individually be contacting all the council members to let you know the exact date and time. And if you have any specific items you would like looked at, how you communicate that to them.
Any questions? Okay. Thank you. Judith.
I wanted him to repeat what the date is for the next debate.
October 18th. Thanks. I think that's the third Wednesday of October.
It is.
Candidates Forum?
Yeah. And you'll get a notice in your utility mailing at the 1st of October. So we'll get those out there.
Okay. Anything else, Judith? No. Jermaine?
I just want to... We'll have another council meeting before, but today's the deadline for if you wanted to volunteer for the Project Homeless Connect that we do annually at the Skagit Valley College. And you just have to go onto their website. I mean, they do everything from haircuts to helping folks find jobs and housing, and I'll be there doing some pet grooming. They do all kinds of stuff for, you know, just the one day. The event is August 25th. It starts at 9 o'clock in the morning, goes till 2 p.m. It's right in the parking lot right outside of where the McIntyre Hall is. And I know in 2014, that was the first year I did it, and they served 1,300, almost 1,400 people that day. And after the fact, I realized that our veterans didn't know about that, so I thought I'd make the announcement so that our local veterans will know about this. Anyway, that's it. Today's the deadline if you wanted to volunteer your time for that. And the thing is, like I said, August 25th. Thanks.
Thank you, Jermaine. Brenda?
Okay, Chief Tucker, I wanted to ask about the active shooter drill at the high school. The date on that again is the 21st, is that right?
Yeah, let me look for sure.
I should know. Sergeant McElroy just told me, and it's gone.
I think it is.
I erased some of that from my brain because I'm going to be in Nashville.
Oh, lucky.
So it's on August 22nd from 5 to 9 p.m.
Right.
22nd.
22nd.
Okay. And how might that impact the neighborhood? Is there...
There's going to be, I think they've already started putting the word out, or the press release is going to come out from, I think I got the test press release from Kelly Cargill from the school district.
Okay.
About just emergency vehicles in the area. There could be yelling and lots of moving and lots of people that aren't normally there during that time is all.
Okay, there won't be like roadblocks or anything?
There'll definitely be roads blocked off with emergency vehicles.
Okay.
But typically it's going to be like, well, we've done it in the past, we pretty much occupied 4th Street instead of 3rd Street. But
okay.
there'll be a lot of vehicles involved in it. Ideally, we're going to have 50 or 60 firefighters and probably 20 or 30 police officers if everybody that is sounding like they're committing will be there. And then people from the school district and, you know, will occupy all the parking lots and all that. But it depends on exactly how realistic they get. When we've done this in the past, we actually fired blank rounds inside the school, and people weren't upset about the thought that people were shooting in the area. They were just pissed off that there was noise.
Mm-hmm.
And it was actually gunshots going off in the school. So there may be some noise and all that, but we're going to be done by 9. So.
Okay. Do you think it would be possible to get a copy of the press release so I could Go hand them out.
I don't know if Aaron's seen that one yet or not. I just got it from Kelly.
Because I know there's always people that say, well, I never read the paper. I had no idea.
We can get you a copy of the press release. And also the critical incident management team pre-incident training is on the 21st at 10 a.m.
No, what was that?
The pre-incident training is on Monday, the 21st at 10 a.m. And, Krista's recommending that any of our folks who are going to be at the incident or participating, either observing or acting in the incident, be at the training. And they are still looking for some people to run out of the classroom or be injured in the classrooms. So I will forward you this email that has the dates and times. And what Krista is specifically asking for is who's going to be there. So I knew you were interested. I think I'd understood you were interested, Jermaine, yeah. Judith, Brett. Okay. So the four of you are intending to be there. Are you going, Judith?
Two.
The active shooter drill? No?
No, I don't believe okay. I am.
All right. So Jermaine, Brenda, Julia, Brett.
Would
I will
be too
forward
scared.
The four of you this email and copy Krista so she can kind of keep you in the loop as to what's going on. My understanding is they're intending this to be as realistic as possible, which is why they want you to go to the pre-incident training so you don't walk out of there shocked by what you've seen.
Because we actually have had some emotional responses from school staff whenever we go through mock scenarios, and kind of a nice to get an inoculation before you go in and know what you're talking about. Because yeah. they'll probably be moulaging up the kids and... There'll be kids that look like they have wounds and all that. So,
okay.
The kids love it.
Just as long as you don't request my attendance to be there from that standpoint down the street, we're okay.
We did get a hold of Haley, let her know at the coroner's office.
Okay.
And then, Mark, I think this would be a question to ask you. I have a resident in my ward who gets around in a wheelchair and has difficulty on Metcalf down by the Eagles where there's kind of a drop. And is there anything we can do about that type of situation on the ramps where they go down to the street? There's maybe an inch, maybe 2 inches.
Yeah, we visited. He came and he called me about that. And I've actually got a work order out for our street crew to grind those off.
Okay.
We think we can grind them down adequately. Good. They're not going to be ADA standard, but they will. It'll take... There's like a 2-inch drop on a couple of those, and one of them is not quite that bad, but of the four. But we're going to do that, and it should happen. As I mentioned, they're getting ready to pave, so they're all focused on that. But in the next month, that should happen.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Do you want to mention your cemetery work party?
Yeah, I'll bring up the cemetery work party on Saturday the 12th at 10 o'clock. At Northern State Hospital Cemetery on Helmick Road, we're going to have a work party to go out and trim the markers. We can only trim the grass. We can't do any digging and moving the markers whatsoever, but we're going to be trimming the grass. There's approximately 200 markers out there that we've found so far, and we're going to be addressing those to trim them back up and make them visible again. So anybody's welcome if anybody would like to come up there at 10 on Saturday.
Thank you. Julia. Chuck? Rick?
On Saturday afternoon, we are having a memorial service for probably a lady that knows more people in this town than anybody else, Bev Nelson. She's who we call the ticket lady. She has taken tickets from everybody in this town numerous times. She's been doing it for over 40 years at football, basketball, wrestling, volleyball game. She passed away last week. Having a committal service at the Hamilton Cemetery Friday morning, but a public memorial service at the funeral home at 2 o'clock on Saturday. And if any of you have attended any sporting event over the years, she's either, if she knows you from any point, she'll either wave at you or come say, come give me a hug or something. So if you know her, come support her family or send them a condolences on our website or something with that. City-wise, no, but from a personal standpoint, I had a great weekend. Monday was my first grandchild's birthday. He turned one on Monday. We had a birthday party for him on Sunday, and he's just a running bruiser. He's been walking for about 3 weeks, and he doesn't go around. He goes over. It's just funny to watch, and he just bulldozes his way. And on another great accolade, on Saturday evening, my daughter blessed us with our third grandchild, a little girl. So I now have three grandchild in the period of a year. So it's going to be great.
Congratulations.
So, yeah. Yep, and they're all doing well. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Brett?
I just want to thank the Taproom guys for coming. It was a choice between $1,000 or not at all. And so that was kind of the best option we had. So I'm glad we're trying to fix that. I think, you know, food trucks and mobile vending add vibrancy and options for people to spend money. So thanks for bringing that forward. I had a question about the Council Strategic Fund. I couldn't remember the origin of the money. Where does that come from again?
It's a tax on domestic water.
Oh, okay. And then last, someone asked me about how the city can kind of salvage the food forest. I know the two parties are negotiating what happens to that, but is there anything, not on necessarily behalf of the Food Forest Association, but the idea and the plants that are already in the ground, what can the city do to kind of help that?
Well, I think right now we're just trying to help them mend their fences. It's not really our business, okay. But give it some time and see if calmness prevails and it gets back to work. I don't know. Do you have a better way to say that? It's not really us anymore.
I'm attempting to engage in shuttle diplomacy. I think the city could play a role because the city does still own the property, and I've suggested one potential path that is acceptable to the food forest, but I haven't heard if it would be acceptable to the food bank. My concern, of course, is timing with the trees out there and whether they're being watered or not. It's not, what I told both parties was, let's take a deep breath, and we, the city, want to see both of these be vibrant and successful and working together. So whatever the city can do to help, we're standing by to help. And I'll remind them that, I've had conversations yet this week, and we're in the stage of diplomacy where we're waiting for the food bank to let us know what they're thinking.
Thank you.
Anything else, Brent?
No.
Okay, my turn, I guess. First of all, I saw two things on social media that I wonder about. There was a large tree that fell somewhere in the area of the school. Does anyone know about that? Gigantic.
Isn't that the one we drove by?
I must have been drinking my coffee.
No, it was on the corner of Jameson and 4th.
Oh.
Huh. Oh, was that?
You must have had another date, not me.
That was the chief and I, yeah. Yeah, Jameson and 4th.
So what's the status of that thing? Anybody know?
He wants the firewood.
Well, I want to make sure it doesn't hurt somebody coming down the rest of the way.
All right, yeah, we better take a look at that. The city crew had coned it off, and the property owner was assessing it when the chief and I drove by.
Yes, it's in the right-of-way, and it's a big one. Secondly, on social media, I saw somebody asking about roosters, and I did not know the answer. Were they under ordinance? Do we allow them in large areas or no areas?
Roosters are prohibited.
Okay, well, I can answer that one then.
And also commonly located throughout the city.
Yes, but as you well know, we are complaint-driven enforcers. So National Night Out was a huge success, as the chief already talked about. I thought that came together really nicely, considering the short amount of lead time. Are you guys going to talk over me? Thank you. The concert had even more people than last week, which was huge the first week, so it's really kicked off. It's great for the community. I appreciate everybody who worked on that. We've got the fire danger going on, so everybody be careful out there. And for our staff, make sure our outside workers are staying hydrated. We have got to go into executive here under RCW 4230.110 subparagraph 1B.
under the topic of lease or purchase of real estate when disclosure would increase the price. Don't really anticipate any action. You're all welcome to stay if you like, but we'll be in there about 15 minutes. If we don't see anyone come out, thank you all for coming. So we'll go into executive at 8:27.
Okay, good job, everybody.
Oh, please do. I can't do it tomorrow.
Well, tomorrow.
And I can't do it Saturday, but I could do it Friday.
Okay.